This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Because this election is going to be very consequential, not only for Americans, but also for the diaspora, for the Africans.
That's Aissata Sotiam from Mali on her thoughts on the upcoming U.S. election. Details coming up also. Mozambique's leading opposition party is demanding a recount of the October 19th election results. And American expatriates who work for the U.S. Embassy in Ethiopia are gearing up for the upcoming U.S. elections. These stories and more on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. International religious groups say Africa is home to 680 million Christians, more than a quarter of the world's Christian population. Many African Christians have a keen interest in the coming election in the United States, given that both candidates, Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, have promised to anchor their potential presidencies in Christian values. Darren Taylor reports.
Professor Rantoa Letsosa, Dean of the Faculty of Theology and Religion at Pretoria University in South Africa, says many African Pentecostals and evangelical Christians identify strongly with former U.S. President Donald Trump. Letsosa says they consider the Republican candidate to be anti-abortion and anti-LGBTQI plus rights, as they are.
For four straight years, I fought for Christians like no president has ever fought before. You know that.
On the cusp of the election, Trump is pushing hard to win the votes of U.S. Christian voters. Letsosa says Africans are particularly impressed by Trump's support for Israel, who many see as God's chosen nation. Trump told a recent meeting of faith leaders in North Carolina his first term in office showed he would always stand proudly with Israel.
I kept my promise, recognized Israel's eternal capital, and opened the American embassy in Jerusalem. I was called by kings and prime ministers. I was called by everybody, don't do it, don't do it. They said there'd be bloodshed and everything else all over. There was none. And I did something that no other president had the courage to do.
Many charismatic pastors in Africa want Trump to win the election.
We are also going to pray for America. Especially for Donald Trump.
One of his most vocal supporters is Hubert Angel, a Zimbabwean evangelical preacher and self-described anointed prophet. From his base in the United Kingdom, Angel uses satellite TV and the internet to minister to daily audiences of millions around the globe. During a recent broadcast, he called the Democratic Party's candidate, Kamala Harris, satanic for supporting women's freedom of choice to terminate pregnancies.
There is no time like this one where abortion has been given a lot of power. Key moments from Kamala Harris' first rally speech. Abortion and Trump and freedom. She needed to be the poster girl for abortion. Research from the book of Genesis, you realize that every time calamity comes, before calamity, the people killed the children.
Wow.
Some theologians say African Christian backing of Harris is more muted, even though she's a lifelong churchgoer, often voices support for Israel, and attends synagogue on holy days with her Jewish husband. Speaking at a recent church service in Georgia, the Democrats said the election represented a crossroads for Americans of faith. They could choose to live in a country of chaos, fear, and hate, or a nation of freedom, compassion, and justice.
When we come across our brothers and sisters in need, let us, as the Good Samaritan did, see in the face of a stranger a neighbor. And let us recognize that when we shine the light in moments of darkness, it will guide our feet into the path of peace. And let us remember that while weeping may endure for a night, joy cometh in the morning. Thank you. May God bless.
Netsosa says Harris' support in Africa may be of the quiet kind, but it does recognize in her a leader untainted by the many moral controversies hanging over the Trump campaign. Trump has been accused of sexual misconduct. His company has been convicted of financial improprieties, and he faces federal charges for attempting to interfere with a peaceful transfer of power after his 2020 election loss to President Joe Biden. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
I asked Ayasata Sotiam, who is a naturalized citizen from Mali and currently working as a consultant in information systems in Washington, D.C., armed with the vote, how can Africans in the diaspora influence critical policy discussions on immigration, trade, and foreign relations between the U.S. and African nations?
In my opinion, the first thing to do is to be engaged and to be informed, because the information that is critical to all of us is readily available. But you have to sort of show a will to understand what is going on and what is at stake, because this election is going to be very consequential, not only for Americans, but also for the diaspora, for the Africans.
So what does the U.S. election actually mean for U.S.-African relations?
Sure. So you have two groups of people. You have the people who are living readily here in the United States, and basically they want to make sure that whoever is going to be in the White House for the next 4 years will make sure that they can earn a living, they can have housing, they can have decent jobs, they can take care of their kids who can go to good schools, and they won't be afraid to be deported or sent home. And then back home, the people want to make sure that the United States will be sensible to their needs. And mostly we are living in poverty. We have a lot of needs for development. And there is a lot of programs, i.e. some of the USAID and the American government. We want to make sure that those are still available to us.
You're a naturalized citizen. Although polls have found that the large majority of immigrant voters back Democratic candidates, the African diaspora is not a monolithic voting group. There are no definitive surveys as to the political leanings. How should Africans trend as far as political parties when they vote?
I am a Democrat myself, and I think that the Democrat candidate sort of represent most of the aspirations that we have. Actually, the differences in opinion and voting are different in the diaspora. I think it's because we don't have the big picture. We need, first of all, to work hard for unity, for solidarity, and to make sure that we talk among ourselves, to make sure that our interest is, you know, in the heart of our discussions, and that we understand that being Democrat is in our best interest.
That's very true. The African diaspora, it's not a single entity. Each has its own needs, wants, and aspirations. You are a Democrat, somebody could be a Republican. Diaspora, that means, is not united. And without unity, there is no strength.
But no, I think we should have one voice, because only with one voice can we have, you know, our opinion matters. I think the only way people can hear our voices is if we go united and strong.
That was Aissata Sotiam, a naturalized citizen from Mali, currently working as a consultant in information systems. She talked to me from Washington, D.C. Despite being thousands of kilometers from home, some American expatriates who work for the U.S. Embassy in Ethiopia are gearing up for the upcoming U.S. elections, with many highlighting the unique perspectives they bring to the voting process from abroad. Reporter Eskinder Ferreo spoke with some in Addis Ababa and has the story.
Eva, who only gave her first name for privacy reasons, was an environmental attorney before joining the Foreign Service. She is originally from Maryland and now works at the U.S. Embassy in Addis Ababa. She has been an overseas voter since 2017. For her, voting is a patriotic duty. She also says participating in the U.S. elections gives her an opportunity to inform and educate others about the U.S. electoral process.
I think America is in a sort of a unique position in that the rest of the world pays extremely close attention to U.S. elections each time, well, at least the U.S. presidential election each time they occur. So in addition to staying updated with the events and the electoral process, we also spend a lot of time explaining to others the technicalities of the elections and our political process.
I've registered to vote every year that we've been overseas.
Somerville Evans, a registered voter from Virginia, says living in Africa makes him feel somewhat removed from U.S. politics, but not disconnected. He stays informed through online news and video calls with his family.
It's sort of quieter being overseas. You don't get bombarded with as many commercials, phone calls, and things like that.
Evans carefully avoids sharing his political views, but stresses the importance of thoughtful policy proposals from candidates. Another expat, Marjon Kamani, who has lived abroad for 15 years and works at the U.S. Embassy, said she has voted both in Tennessee and Washington, D.C. She says she is curious about candidates' positions on both domestic and foreign policy-related issues.
Yeah, I like to track both candidates and what they're thinking about that, but also issues impacting all Americans, the economy, immigration, the Constitution and constitutional protection.
For Christina Smith, a native Oregon working for USAID in Ethiopia, voting while abroad is a different experience. She calls herself a news junkie and says she would be volunteering in the election if she were back in the U.S.
I miss that. I would be, you know, meeting with friends and talking more about the issues. I miss that enthusiasm and that buzz that I know is happening.
Smith explained how living in multiple countries has given her a deeper appreciation for voting rights.
I've realized after living in more than five different countries abroad that everybody doesn't have that easy access to voting, and I realize that it really makes a difference to have the participation of a wider electorate, especially on women's issues. You know, women hold up half of the sky, as they say, and if women's issues aren't being represented, then we have a more challenging time with childcare or with other issues in terms of women making decisions.
As the U.S. elections approach, these American voters in Ethiopia remain engaged despite the distance from home. Their voices, along with those of many other expatriates, could play a critical role in determining the next president of the United States. Iskander Freo, VOA Africa, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
You're listening to African News Tonight on the Voice of America. Find us on voaafrica.com. There you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can share your thoughts about the news and our programs by WhatsApp. The number is +1-202-258-3076. Every Wednesdays, we'll be sharing our listeners' comments on African News Tonight. Mozambique's leading opposition party, PADEMOS, has filed a lawsuit demanding a recount of the October 19th election results, which led to protests and violence after the ruling party was named the winner. The suit filed on Sunday called on the Constitutional Court to give a true judgment on who won the elections, according to the document seen by French news agency AFP. It demanded the court repeat the overall counting of votes, citing numerous alleged irregularities. The commission on Thursday announced the ruling Frelimo Party's candidate, Daniel Chapo, as the winner with 71% of the vote and 195 out of 250 seats in parliament. Podemos has published its own count, saying its candidate, Venancio Molande, won with 53.3% and 138 seats. Representatives from some 200 countries will gather next month in Azerbaijan's capital, Baku, for the COP29 Climate Change Conference. Among other topics, the conference will focus on the money that wealthy nations give to less developed countries each year to cope with climate change. Charmaine Lee reports from Berlin.
Back in 2009, the wealthiest nations agreed to collectively pay $100 billion each year through 2025 to slash carbon emissions that contribute to global warming and support the climate adaptation needs of developing countries. But a 2021 UN report declared this figure to be obsolete, saying the need has skyrocketed to $6 trillion annually. Even before, countries struggled to fulfill their promises, according to the UN Office for Economic Cooperation and Development. Much of the money was also given out as loans instead of grants. This can put already debt-ridden countries in a dilemma. Gaia Larson, Director of Climate Finance Access at the World Resources Institute, told VOA News.
Well, certainly we don't want developing countries who are already dealing with too much debt having to take on even more debt in order to deal with the crisis, in part because that means that many countries won't be able to invest in the resilience that they need. So they won't be prepared when the climate problems strike.
COP29 is dubbed the finance COP, so wealthier nations that are responsible for most carbon emissions are set to negotiate contributions to help other countries build resilience against climate change and deal with losses and damage. Public funds in the form of grants to less developed countries can help build a good base, according to Carolina Huri, researcher at the Center on Climate Politics and Security at the Finnish Institute of International Affairs.
The solutions for this have been that this NCQG could be this onion structure, like that there in the core of the onion could be the public finance in the form of grants. And then sort of the outer layer could be these some other innovative investment solutions that perhaps then the contribution base there could be broader, but in the core there would still be this grant-based public finance.
As climate policies are often dependent on elections, Huri added that the U.S. elections in early November may have a massive impact on the COP29 negotiations. The United States is the biggest historic emitter, so its level of cooperation with the current biggest emitter, China, will play a major role in determining the outcome of the talks. COP29 is set to run from November 11th to 22nd in Baku. Charmaine Lee, VOA News, Berlin.
A doctors group and the United Nations say fighters from the paramilitary rapid support forces, RSF, in East Central Sudan, in a multi-day attack, killed more than 120 people in one town. It was the group's latest attack against the Sudanese military after suffering a series of setbacks, losing ground to the military in the area. According to the Associated Press, the UN said Saturday the RSF fighters went on a rampage on the eastern and northern sides of Gezira province between October 20 and 25, shooting at civilians and sexually attacking women and girls. The doctors' union said at least 124 people were killed and 200 others wounded in the town of Sariha, adding that the group rounded up at least 150 others. It called on the UN Security Council to pressure the RSF to open safe corridors to enable aid groups to reach people in impacted villages. French President Emmanuel Macron arrives today in Morocco, where he is scheduled to meet with the North African Kingdom's leaders and discuss partnership in trade, climate change, and managing immigration. The French news agency AFP says Macron is scheduled to meet with the king and Prime Minister Aziz and address Morocco's parliament. His visit comes months after he changed France's long-standing public position and backed Morocco's autonomy plan for the disputed Western Sahara, a move that endeared the country to Morocco. In recent months, France's new interior minister has pushed for Rabat to take a hard-line approach towards immigration and seek deals with countries like Morocco to better prevent migrants from crossing into Europe. And time now for our sports wrap-up. I have our VOA sports analyst Mokbil Yabaro on ANT today. Thank you for being on the show, Mokbil.
Thanks for having me, Yehais.
So there was a lot of action-packed football in the top European leagues this weekend. Can you give us a rundown on some of the big names and games?
Absolutely. So we're before we jump into the Premier League, we had what they call the El Clasico at La Liga. Barcelona versus Real Madrid. Real Madrid was on a 42-game unbeaten streak. Wow. The longest streak in La Liga was 43 games held by Barcelona, and they ended up playing Barcelona on their 43rd game. And unfortunately for them, not only was their streak broken, but it was broken in decisive fashion. They lost at home to Barcelona in their worst defeat this season, 4-0. The likes of potential Ballon d'Or winner Vinicius Jr. not being able to convert. Kylian Mbappe, one of the world's best, brightest stars, not able to convert or score. All of them really being held to zero at home. Barcelona flying through with the 4-0 victory, and they are atop of the league at La Liga now currently. Now, jumping into the English Premier League, we have some of the top games that we just touched on. Aston Villa versus Bournemouth. Aston Villa is currently in the fourth spot. Bournemouth were able to solidify a late game-tying game to salvage 1 point. They also are coming off of a victory last week, beating number third place team Arsenal 2-0 decisively. So they're kind of gaining some momentum right now. Manchester City at the top of the league, having beat Southampton 1-0. We also have Chelsea kind of really getting into form at the moment. They're in fifth place currently. They're doing a lot better than they were last season. They were able to get a 2-1 victory against Newcastle. Arsenal and Liverpool probably was the biggest game over the weekend. And the game ended up in a draw, 2-2 draw, very exciting game, 1-0, 1-1, 2-1, 2-2. So, you know, me and my Arsenal fans versus our main man, Liverpool. Dave Vandy, and the Liverpool guys, they did well, were able to secure some points playing away. So very tough matchup. And last but not least, West Ham versus Manchester United. This should have been a game that Manchester United should have been able to win, but unfortunately for them, they lost 2-1.
And Mokbil, let's stick with football for a bit. Manchester United's manager Erik ten Hag was sacked. What does that mean for the team?
Oh my goodness, yeah, it's a great question. I don't think any of us really know, because this is a team that kind of was built around ten Hag. He brought in a bunch of players that he either coached in the past in the Dutch league or has some kind of association with or wanted to play with. And bringing all these guys over still has not been able to amount to anything. Currently, Manchester United is in the 14th spot. This is a team, arguably the biggest team in Europe. You can make the argument for sure and say it's the biggest English team historically, having won the most Premier League titles. They're in a very bad position. Hopefully their interim coach, Ruud van Nistelrooy, might be able to get some things shaking.
And finally, Mokbil, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, UFC 308, had some shocking results. What were they?
Ilia Topuria was able to still regain his featherweight title and beat Max Holloway. Max is a huge contender. People were not expecting him to knock him out. He knocked him out for the first time in his career. And let's go over Kasmat Chimaev was able to beat and submit Rob Whitaker for the middleweight co-main chair.
Mokbil Yabaro, our sports analyst, thank you for your input. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight with our producer, David Vandy, and our engineer, Killer Williams. Thanks for choosing the Voice of America.